From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman reporting. A man who was discharged from the U.S. Air Force dishonorably opened fire on a church near San Antonio, Texas, killing 26 worshipers, wounding at least 20 others. This is yet another mass murder in the U.S. with an assault weapon, killing persons here from age 5 to 72. Texas Governor Greg Abbott.
This will be a long-suffering mourning for those in pain. We ask for God's comfort, for God's guidance, and for God's healing for all those who are suffering.
The gunman also dead here. There is no clue as to a motive. In remarks directed at Japanese business executives today, President Trump called on them to manufacture more in the U.S.
I'm pleased to have an opportunity to discuss how we can strengthen and improve the economic ties between the United States and Japan. And I have to say, for the last many decades, Japan has been winning. You do know that.
President Trump is on a two-week visit to Asia, in which he also will visit South Korea, China, Vietnam, and the Philippines. He'll be attending the East Asia Summit and an ASEAN meeting. On this trip, he is pushing aggressively for other leaders to support the doing something about North Korea's missile and nuclear program. Election Commission in the Democratic Republic of Congo announcing presidential elections to take place December 23rd of next year. The election supposed to have been taking place in late 2016, but had been delayed, triggering some unrest in the country. This is VOA News. A helicopter carrying Saudi Prince Mansour bin Makhrin, the deputy governor of Asir province, crashed near the Yemeni border that happened Sunday, killing all eight people on board. There was no immediate cause of that crash. Meantime, the Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman, ordered the arrest of several officials, including a billionaire nephew of King Salman, in what is being described as an anti-corruption crackdown. But Middle East Institute scholar Zubair Iqbal says this is part of a battle between conservatives, who rule by consensus, and younger, more liberal members of the Saudi royal family.
What is really happening underlying all this is essentially the element of consolidation of power. You use any vehicle in order to consolidate your power in a situation where you realize that your party is no more a cohesive party which works through consensus.
The purge also targeted the head of the National Guard, and he has been detained. The Islamic State claiming responsibility for Sunday's car bombing at a security checkpoint in the southern Yemeni city of Aden, killing at least 15, wounding nearly 20. At the same time, the Saudi-led coalition is blaming Iran-backed Houthi rebels for a ballistic missile intercepted near Riyadh, calling it a dangerous escalation. There were no casualties. Australia has turned down New Zealand's offer to accept 150 refugees from offshore detention centers on Nauru and Papua New Guinea, but opened to further consideration following a meeting between the country's leaders. Here is Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull.
As you know, we have an arrangement with the United States whereby a substantial number of 1,250 can, subject to the United States' rigorous vetting, be resettled in the United States, and we're pursuing those arrangements at the moment, and that is our commitment.
New Zealand's newly elected Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern made her first official visit to Australia, discussing a number of issues, including immigration, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and this month's upcoming summit in Vietnam. Powerful typhoon hitting south-central Vietnam, so far at least 44 people are dead in its wake. Rains up to 78 centimeters are being reported some parts of the region over the last 24 hours into early today. The typhoon is the second to hit Vietnam in a month and the worst in 16 years. Shalane Flanagan dethroned Mary Keitney on Sunday and became the first American woman to win the New York City Marathon since 1977. Keitney came in second.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, November 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Today, Monday, is Judgment Day in Liberia, as the Supreme Court is set to decide on a challenge to the October 10th election.
The Supreme Court has determined Monday morning that the petition filed by Liberty Party is denied and the runoff should take place. All the Supreme Court can say that the petition is granted, which means that the runoff should not take place.
Tiawo Gonglo is the former Solicitor General of Liberia. Zimbabwe human rights lawyers are in court today to seek the release of an American citizen for allegedly retweeting a post which calls President Robert Mugabe a sick and tired leader. And more protests are expected today in Togo and tomorrow and Wednesday as the government lifts a ban on weekday protests.
We think that it's a victory for us because what was at stake is to succeed in maintaining this constitutional right to protest when we want.
Bridget Ajamabo is the coordinator of a coalition of 14 political parties leading the protest in Togo. The European Union urges South Sudan's warring parties to commit to implementing the August 2015 agreement. And we'll look at the impact of the high cost of vanilla on Madagascar's economy. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Today, Monday, is Judgment Day in Liberia as the country's Supreme Court is set to decide on a challenge to the October 10th presidential first round election. The court last week ordered the country's Elections Commission to stay all actions pertaining to the November 7th runoff elections. This came after three political parties led by Charles Bramskin's Unity Party filed a petition for a writ of prohibition because of what they said was a violation of the Constitution and also a gross irregularities during the October 10th first round election. Tiawon Gonglo is the former Solicitor General of Liberia. He says the court can either deny the petition, thereby paving the way for the runoff to take place, or it can agree with the petitioners, which means the runoff will be delayed until the Elections Commission hears the petitioners' complaint.
The Supreme Court can determine Monday morning at 10 a.m. that the petition filed by Liberty Party is denied and the runoff should take place. Or the Supreme Court can say that the petition is granted, which means that the runoff should not take place before the matter before the hearing officer of the Elections Commission is concluded. Those are the two possibilities.
So the merits now, Councillor Charles Bramskin of the Liberty Party, joined by the ruling Unity Party and the other parties that lost to Josh Weah's coalition in the first round, they have complained of massive irregularities. I'm sure you are aware that the Elections Commission say it has made a presentation with the court. Is that correct?
Well, I was in court when the argument was heard. The case before the Supreme Court is not on the merit of the case that is before the Elections Commission. What is before the Supreme Court is whether or not the runoff should take place before the matter before the hearing officer of the Elections Commission is concluded. So the relief that Liberty Party is seeking is to stop the rerun until this matter is concluded. Liberty Party argued that for the runoff to go on would be prejudicial. In fact, their complaint that there were massive irregularities and fraud has already been decided, because then there will be a rerun and someone will be declared winner. What the matter that Liberty Party carried before the Elections Commission is still pending. Of course, the law under Article 3 of the Constitution provides that when an election takes place on the second Tuesday in October, if no one wins an absolute majority, a second ballot should take place in the second Tuesday following the declaration results. And the declaration results should take place not later than 15 days after balloting takes place. Now, that is where the confusion is, whether or not where there is runoff and there is complaint, the runoff should take place. I believe the issue of the complaint, why the runoff may not have been contemplated. The Constitution just said if there is no winner, then there should be a second ballot. So the question is where there is a complaint, and there are two front runners, whether or not the runoff should take place while the complaint is being determined. Liberty Party says no. The Election Commission says yes. So that is a matter that the Supreme Court is supposed to decide.
Councillor Gonglo, and now, so you have, say, the president of Liberia, she made a comment that she believes that the elections should take place within the confines of the Constitution of Liberia. The Elections Commission has gone before the court and have said that while there were one or two challenges or difficulties in the October 10th election, they did not amount to fraud or an intention to target any particular political party. So if the election is to be held within the confines of the Constitution, is it likely to say that the court is going to side with the Elections Commission?
Well, we will see what the court will say Monday morning, because the court is the final interpreter of the law, especially constitutional matters. Whatever the Supreme Court says is the interpretation of the Constitution, and what the Liberian people meant in writing Article 3 of the Constitution will be what everyone in Liberia will be guided by.
Tiawon Gonglo is the former Solicitor General of Liberia. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Togo's 14-party opposition coalition says its demonstrations planned for tomorrow, Tuesday and Wednesday, will take place now that the government has lifted a ban on weekday protests. The parties have been demonstrating to demand a return to the country's 1992 constitution, which calls for a 2-5-year term limit for presidents. They also want President Fortuna Simbe to step down. The government last week said it was ending the ban on weekday protests after meeting with civil society and political party leaders, and also to avoid deaths and injuries that have been associated with the protests. But Bridget Ajamagbo, coordinator of the coalition leading the protests, says the government's reversal is a victory for the opposition, which had insisted all along that it had a constitutional right to demonstrate.
We think that it's a victory for us, because what was at stake is to succeed in maintaining this constitutional right to protest when we want by following what the law asks for. That's why we said that we will not accept this ban. We think also that it is a sign that we must continue to resist to this government, and we'll get finally what we want. We'll succeed on putting to the end this regime, which has been there for 50 years.
The government minister of security said that this was a decision reached between the government and the opposition to avoid many people being killed. But does the opposition see this as a victory for your cause?
As a victory, we have been demonstrating very peacefully. And what happened on the 18th and the 19th of October showed that this is the government that has some Togolese people who have been armed by the government to make violence in the country. And as for us, as opposition, we have been demonstrating peacefully.
Does this mean now that the demonstrations that are planned, say, for tomorrow, Tuesday, and Wednesday, are those demonstrations going to take place?
They will go to take place. And what we did is that even during this last weekend, we went through all the country. We went to talk to people. We had meetings with people in the cities to explain to them that they have to continue to resist and that they have to come out on the 7th, the 8th, and the 9th for this big protest. And we are confident that many Togolese will be on the road again.
Bridget, I wanted to ask you, your president, Fortuna Simbe, was in Liberia this past week. As you know, Liberia is supposed to be having a runoff election, and your president was there in Liberia with the Guinean president, Alpha Conde, representing ECOWAS. What do you make of that?
You know, we were very surprised to see that he went in Liberia to try to solve the problem that came out from the election there. We think that he is not a good example, and he does not have this moral authority to intervene in this kind of problem. He would rather use this time and this energy to solve his own problem he has at home.
Bridget Ajamagbo is coordinator of a coalition of 14 political parties leading the protest in Togo. She was speaking with me from Atamabe, Togo's fifth largest city. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butt in Washington. Today is Monday, November 6. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. Human rights lawyers in Zimbabwe are expected today, Monday, to ask the country's high court to release an American citizen who has been in custody since Friday last week for allegedly retweeting a post saying President Robert Mugabe was a sick and tired leader. Meanwhile, and as Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare, the 93-year-old Mugabe says he wants his vice president Emmerson Mnangagwa out of the ruling ZANU-PF party.
In an interview with VOA, Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights spokesperson Kumbirai Mafunda said the American Martha Donovan, who is facing charges of subversion and insulting President Robert Mugabe's authority after she allegedly retweeted a post saying the 93-year-old leader was sick and tired, would seek bail at the High Court this Monday.
Our lawyers are working on a bail application seeking an order for the release of Martha O'Donovan, who was detained in prison after the magistrate's court refused to grant an application for an order seeking her release after our lawyers had indicated that she had been arrested and detained illegally. So she is in prison, in remand prison, and the Tlaxcala lawyers are working on filing a bail application in the High Court seeking her release on bail.
The 23-year-old American has been in custody since her arrest in a dawn raid of her house on Friday. In court on Saturday, she dismissed both charges as, quote, baseless and malicious, unquote. Police say they have been monitoring her since September, and they have it on solid ground that she wanted Zimbabweans to rebel against President Mugabe. The 93-year-old Zimbabwean leader, meanwhile, wants his ally Emmerson Mnangagwa relinquish the post of vice president. Over the weekend, Mugabe had this to say of his longtime ally and his sympathizers.
Final decision, because I am annoyed.
All this nonsense. You prepare to form your own party?
We can't have you insulting us a day in, day out. Okay? Go your way. We go our way.
President Mugabe, who has ruled Zimbabwe since 1980, when the country got its independence from Great Britain, has indicated that he wants to replace Mnangagwa with his wife, Grace Mugabe, as vice president of Zimbabwe in December, when the country's ruling party meets ahead of 2018 elections. Mugabe, who turns 94 in February next year, wants to contest in Zimbabwe's 2018 elections expected around mid-year. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
The European Union is asking the warring parties in South Sudan to show commitment to the IGAD-led initiative to revive the August 2015 peace deal. The head of the EU delegation to South Sudan says the EU has agreed to fund the revitalization process. Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Speaking to reporters shortly after meeting with the South Sudan Cabinet Affairs Minister Martin Elia Lomuro, head of EU delegation to South Sudan Stefano Di Leo said the South Sudan government and parties to the agreement have no other option but to revive the 2015 peace deal.
The revitalization is the only chance to reach peace in this country. We are fully backing the process, but our backing is not only by words. The European Union and its member states are funding and supporting politically and financially the process because we fully believe that this is the way forward.
The transitional government of national unity has on several occasions blamed the international community for not providing funds for implementing the peace deal. But De Leo says the European Union is not convinced the warring parties are serious about ending the conflict in South Sudan. He says South Sudan government forces, their militias, and rebel fighters must all silence their guns before the EU provides any more funding.
What we want to see is, first of all, a ceasefire that is working. This would be a big achievement. And we look at this. So we fully support every movement and every discussion that leads to a ceasefire. This is the basis of every other understanding.
De Leo says the international community also wants to see South Sudanese authorities provide unfettered access for the delivery of humanitarian services across South Sudan. The regional bloc IGAD is expected to announce a timetable for the new round of talks between the warring parties in yet another attempt to revive the Seki 2015 peace deal. Lomro issued this warning to South Sudanese authorities who are blocking humanitarian aid workers.
And I want to take this chance to tell our governors in all the states, to the leadership of the national security of the army in the states, that once General Majer has issued a document clearing agencies to take humanitarian assistance to whatever area they say they should go, none of you has the authority to stop it. And we are taking this very serious because humanitarian access has become our problem and is being politicized.
Yei River State Governor David Lokonga ordered all non-governmental organizations operating in his state to submit their work plan and annual budget to his office. Some humanitarian aid workers in Yei consider the governor's directive as an impediment standing in the way of the work of aid workers. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
As the price of vanilla continues to skyrocket from around $200 per kilo a year ago to currently over $600 per kilo, impacts can be felt in Madagascar. The island nation produces between 70 and 80% of the world's vanilla. Nathaniel De La Fiol is the CEO of La Faza, a sustainable vanilla trade company. He spoke to Ricky Stryak about what the price increase means for local farmers.
Prices have been on the rise for vanilla for several years now, maybe as much as sort of 4 or 5 years as a general trend. And certainly over the last 2 years, it has really risen dramatically without any pause. So yeah, it's really changed the market. It's obviously it's a very popular flavor in the U.S., in the whole world. And so this is starting to have some meaningful impact in the food industry. And so when the market changes for this commodity, Madagascar is always central to that change and to the issues surrounding it, whether it's based around supply out of the country of Madagascar, harvest dynamics, crop quality, things like that. It really plays into the entire world supply chain for vanilla beans. So it's a pretty critical issue what's going on in Madagascar in terms of what that commodity price is doing worldwide.
In terms of the cyclone that happened earlier this year, is it true that it destroyed around 30% of the country's vanilla crop? And what impact did that have on local farmers as well?
You know, the cyclone that came in March was a pretty strong storm. It was a Category 4 cyclone. Thankfully, it didn't have a massive footprint like some of the storms we've seen recently hitting different geographic areas of the world. But it was quite a strong storm, and it made a direct 90-degree hit right at the heart of vanilla production territory in Madagascar, so right between the cities of Antala and Sambava, which is about as central to the Madagascar vanilla industry as you can get. It is still, I would say, a bit unclear as to just how much damage to the crop occurred during the cyclone. I've heard anywhere from 20% to 30% of the, you know, sort of the country's crop was affected. Now, the question is, was it destroyed entirely or not? And I think there's a lot of evidence to suggest that at least some of the vanilla beans that were growing at the time were still able to be harvested and then cured into finished vanilla.
In terms of the vanilla economy, let's say, in Madagascar, are they mostly coming from big companies or Do small farmers see some of this profit?
Yes, and it's a great question, and I do end up talking about this issue quite a bit off and on, because it is a very it is a very smallholder farmer driven crop in Madagascar. There are some larger plantations for sure. There are some production sites that depend on day labor. And that's certainly been a part of the industry for decades. However, most of the Madagascar crop is really produced by smallholder farmers.
Nathaniel De La Fille is the CEO of La Faza, a sustainable vanilla trade company. You're speaking to Ricky Stryak. And now for Daybreak Africa Sports, here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good Monday morning to you, Samson.
A very good Monday morning to you, James. We begin in the U.S. and in New York, where Kenyan two-time world half marathon champion Jeffrey Kamwuro cruised to his maiden marathon victory when he triumphed at the New York City Marathon on Sunday. Kamwuro broke away from a bunch of four rivals with 3 kilometers to go to win in 2 hours, 10 minutes, 53 seconds. The 24-year-old, who had finished second in 2015 behind Stanley Biwott, broke away from Wilson Kipsang Kiptotich and Ethiopians Desisa Lilisa and Lemi Bahanu Hale to record a hugely satisfying victory. Kipsang finished second in 2 hours, 10 minutes, 56 seconds, just 3 seconds behind Kamwuro, as Didisa finished in 3rd place ahead of Bahanu Hale. In the women's category, Shalane Flanagan became the first American woman to win the New York City Marathon in 40 years when she claimed a dominant victory over Kenyan 3-time champion Mary Kitani on Sunday. Flanagan's time of 2 hours, 26 minutes, 53 seconds was quick enough to beat the 3-time defending champion Mary Kitani of Kenya and became the first American woman to win since Mickey Goman in 1977. In basketball news, Mali's women and Nigeria's men made history after winning the first ever edition of the FIBA 3x3 African Cup, which took place in Lome, Togo, which ended on Sunday. Mali had a perfect 6-0 record, beating Nigeria in the 12-11 thriller, where Mali top scorer Djineba Ndiaye had a game high of 5 points. However, Nigeria's basketball senior men national team, the Tigers, defeated Congo by 21-9 to pick the men's title. Azoma Dike won the Most Valuable Player award, beating Ivory Coast Sisiane Taure and Eli of Madagascar. In rugby news, Kenyan rugby has suffered yet another loss following the death of Kenyan Simba player Mike Okumbi on Saturday night. Mike Okumbi, together with his wife Mary Ann Wumbi, were attending a friend's party when the wife took a knife and stabbed him on the left side of his chest following a disagreement. Police confirmed that the Simba striker was rushed to a hospital but pronounced dead on arrival. Police are looking for the wife, who fled immediately after the crime. And now to football news. Moroccan club Wydad Casablanca secured a first African Champions League title in 25 years as Walid El Kati's second half goal secured a 1-0 win over record 8-time winners Al Ahly on Saturday. Wydad won the tie 2-1 on aggregates to end their long wait for a second win in Africa's elite club competition, with victory coming in front of their Rancaro's home supporters, who booed every touch of the ball from Ahly players. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The Democratic Republic of Congo's long-awaited presidential elections have been scheduled for December 2018, the Electoral Commission president announced on Sunday. And that is it for this Monday, November 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beck, for reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Barty in Washington, hoping you have a productive week.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.